Good evening, everyone. My name is Brendan. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date, which is April 15th of 2016. I have a sponsor who's taking me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a home group, which is the Midtown group, and we meet on Sunday nights at 7:30. I would be normally setting up the meeting right now, but I'm very grateful that Sam has asked me to come out and speak. It truly is an honor and a privilege to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous and be of service, whether that's setting up a meeting, picking cigarette butts, speaking at a meeting, because this program absolutely changed my life. And I'm here to tell you in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I always say wherever I speak that the consequences and circumstances of my life is not what makes me alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic is that I have an abnormal relationship with alcohol, that when I start drinking, I have little to no control over the amount I take, and then when I try and stay stopped, I can't stop. And with that, I grew up in Rockville, Maryland. I have a very loving family. I had a very, pretty calm childhood. There's nothing that, there was no trauma in the home. There was nothing that I could point to that explained why I felt the way I did. And the way I felt was, I hear in meetings that I felt different from other people, and I think that's true. But for me, what I remember, and I also say, the other thing I say is that all of this, all the things that I talked about in my story has been things that I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous through reflection. I've had no self-awareness whatsoever about me, my life, what was going on at all. So I think that's important to say too. But looking back, I definitely felt like there was something really wrong with me. I really just didn't have a whole lot of interest in life. I felt like, my whole family had to drag me to do things because I just didn't really see the point. Whether that was hanging out with friends or doing activities, I really just didn't see the point in all of it. And, I definitely also as a child was very obsessed with death and was very, at a very young age. And I had a lot of things, and I didn't really feel very attached to my family from a young age. Wonderful people, very loving, kind. I had probably one of the absolute best childhoods that they could have provided. But I definitely was having thoughts of, I just didn't connect with them. I didn't feel a part of, and I would have thoughts, very not normal thoughts of what a 5 or 6 year old should have. But I had thoughts of, I wish my family would just get into a car accident so I could do whatever I wanted to do, and that's not, and I knew those thoughts were wrong. I didn't hear any of my friends talk about that kind of stuff. But I kind of just went along with it, and it felt like life kind of just happened to me. And then I would react, and it would happen to me, and I would react. I was a very, I heard a speaker one time describe it as having zero emotional insulation. My reaction towards anything and everything was completely backwards, I feel like. I was someone that I would rather have you physically hurt me than hurt my feelings. And I remember, hanging out with one of my friends, and they stole one of my toys, my fire truck, which I held very dearly to my heart, and I took it back from him, and I whacked him on the back of the head with it, and he had to go to the hospital and get stitches, and those kind of things were happening. And someone could say something to me that I perceived as hurtful, and I would absolutely just start crying and would not be able to function, would run away from school. I just did not have normal reactions to life, and I couldn't tell you why that was happening. And people would ask me what's wrong? What's going on with you? And I didn't have an answer. It was kind of just this is just how I am. And I definitely had the idea that no matter where I was, somewhere else would be better than this. When in reality, nothing was wrong with my life, absolutely. But I always felt I think I would just be happier somewhere else. So in third grade, I decided to run away from home. I had $50 worth of quarters in my bag, and I was I'm going to make it out there. And I lasted about 7 hours and then was promptly picked up And again, like, getting those looks from my parents and just, what is wrong with you? Like, what is going on? And again, my response was just, like, I don't know. Please just leave me alone. I was someone that, from a very young age as well, I learned these, tools that I perceived were, survival instincts for me, lying, cheating, stealing. I would lie about anything and everything, because why would you tell the truth when you can lie and get out of trouble, Or I always felt like I needed to be more interesting than I actually was, with other people. So I just come up with these, really just ridiculous stories, and that's just kind of, and that really got in the way of me forming partnerships with people. I had friends, and I was very good about, I was always capable of finding friends, but I always felt like they were closer with each other than I was with them. And, I kind of just was, living a miserable existence, but again, was just, going through life and just being like, this is how it is. I don't really remember my first drink. Someone told me that we were in the woods once and we drank. Once I got sober, I caught up with one of my friends from school, but I remember my first drunk. And my first drunk was on a Wednesday night by myself, and I was in the kitchen, and my dad was working in New York at the time, so it was just me, my mom, and my siblings. And I was, sitting in the kitchen alone and was just, and I knew where the alcohol was kept. It was, up in the cabinets, and I had to get a stool to get up there. But I, knew that's where it was, and I was, what if I just, decided to drink tonight? What if I did that? I know it's against the rules, but, I think, why not, And I was, I'm going to see what this is about. So I pulled up a stool. This was before my growth spurt, and I, stood up on the stool and grabbed, this bottle of Amaretto. Because it was the only thing that I saw. I had no idea what anything else was, and I took a swig of it, kind of got that burning feeling, and was kind of oh, okay, this kind of tastes disgusting, but and then took another one, and and then put it back, took the stool, put it back, and went in my room, and I definitely alcohol does for me that. For at least, I talked to actually my siblings about this, for them, it absolutely changes my perception on life, my reality, everything. I don't even need to have a party. I don't need, to have a good time. I can just be myself, and I'm, having a great time, party of one. And, what happened to me is what's described in the literature as the phenomenon of craving, and I immediately, was like, I want to feel like I, and I, again, I didn't have those words for that, and it didn't feel like alcohol was calling me. It was more just the feeling of this feels good. I want to feel better. And so I went back out and, I got the stool again and took a couple more swigs and put it back. And I took about 6 or 7 trips, within the night, and each time getting more happier, and was this is awesome. I was dancing through the hallways at 2 in the morning of my house. And, and then I blacked out, and I don't really remember a whole lot after that, but, of what happened. I just remember waking up, lying in the bathtub with all my clothes on, and my mom pounding on the door, being like, what the heck is going on? And I was like, I'm taking a bath, leave me alone. And she eventually got the door open, and then I don't really, I mean, she threw me, she got me in the car, because I was starting to lose consciousness, in and out, and I just remember she gave me a bucket, and I was, throwing up in the bucket on the way to the hospital. And, again, alcohol absolutely changed my perspective on life, and, I had a great time. I was in the hospital, puking in a bucket, but, waving at people. I was, sitting there, trying to talk to other people, and, my mom was, crying and all this stuff. I didn't even register on my mind, but, and I, didn't have to put my stomach or anything. I had to meet with a psychiatrist or something like that. And again, I knew, why would you tell the truth when you could lie? And, I immediately lied about my drinking from the get-go. I, thought that, how everyone else drank was you, get a glass and you, fill it up. So that's what I told them I did. I was, pulled it out, poured a glass of it and drank it, and lied about the amount. And they, like, really couldn't do anything, so they just sent me home. And I remember, you know, my dad, in my mind, that wasn't, like, a consequence. That was, like, this was a good time, and, like, yeah, there was, like, a little bump in the road, but, like, it's fine. And then my dad came home and came into my room, and he was, like, what you did was disgusting. And he gave me, like, that look, and, like, I felt that, like, incomprehensible demoralization, you know, and, like, but again, like, that didn't actually hold any weight with me. And I guess they had talked to my school. I was, like, 13 at the time, and we had these, like, guidance counselors or whatever, or advisors, who I hated because I didn't like people telling me what to do, you know. And I remember he pulled me out of class, and we were going on, he was, like, I went to a all-boys private Catholic school, and we were going on a walk in, like, the woods or something. It was really random. And was, like, you know, son, like, drinking is like, you know, when you have like one beer with your dad after you mow a lawn. And I was like, that sounds horrible. I was like, I hate my father, and I know that one beer is not going to do for me what I need it to do, you know. And like, I got in trouble, and like, it wasn't off to the races from there, but I definitely, like, you know, going through the steps, you know, and reading the doctor's opinion, I can see, like, pretty much every time I drank, you know, I could not control the amount I took. It was always to get drunk, and I always thought that was my choice. I was like, well, you know, that was always my intention. So, you know, I never tried, like, oh, I'm going to try controlling my drinking. And, you know, in the beginning, it was, like, a lot of fun. You know, I switched high schools. I went from private to public school because my friends at my school were not drinking and doing the things that I wanted to do. And, you know, I switched to public school and quickly found, you know, the people that were doing the things that I wanted to do, you know. And again, it wasn't, you know, like right off to the races, but I would drink every once in a while, and every time I would get absolutely hammered, and, you know, people would be like, oh yeah, you like did some embarrassing things, and like, I thought it was funny, you know, and like, but it was a lot of fun, and like, you know, I remember one, like, and more and more, I would, like, people would, like, tell me that, like, my drinking was a little off, like, when we would be, like, at parties and stuff, and playing, like, beer pong, like, I was, like, drinking for both sides. It wasn't, like, just me, and they were kind of like, that's weird, and, you know, and my excuse is, like, I'm young, I like to party, you know, get off my back, you know, and, like, I started to slowly, like, more and more, I drank like whenever I could. Like, there weren't any like, oh, I can't drink in the morning. Like, if I had alcohol in the morning, like, I would drink it in the morning. It made chemistry class like a whole lot more interesting. And like, you know, so I didn't have any of those like, oh, like, this is the line that like I'm not gonna cross. It was more just like, I'm just gonna drink like as often as I can, as much as I can. You know, because the way that it made me feel was like absolutely amazing compared to like how I felt without alcohol, which like I heard someone describe at a meeting once, like, walking through life like it's a cheese grater, you know, like, it was so uncomfortable and so painful, and I just, like, didn't know how to, like, deal, I was not interested in dealing with life, you know, and I thought that, like, if everyone just left me alone, everything would be fine, you know, and I continued on through high school, and, like, there weren't, to me, and again, I, like, didn't see them as consequences. There were, you know, I would drink a lot and then, you know, would end up in psych wards. I would drink a lot and end up in the drunk tank. And, like, those, didn't register as problems. It was just, like, this is just, like, what happens when I drink, and I'm okay with that. You know, and I had no idea the damage that I was doing to my my family and my friends. You know, but, like, I didn't ever got in trouble with cops. I never had legal consequences, so I'm, like, I'm fine. You know, and going through high school, I mean, there were times, you know, where I, like, when I would end up in those psych wards and stuff like that, I would be, like, you know, I mean, I don't even know. I just, like, doctors would tell me things like, oh, this is what your problem is. I'm, like, okay, that's my problem. Like, got it. You know, I absolutely never looked at my drinking, and I sure as hell wasn't telling people what my drinking actually looked like. You know, and as high school progressed, it got, you know, I think around, like, senior year, I was pretty much, I was drinking during the weeks, weekends, again, as much as I could, as often as I could. And, you know, my relationship with my parents, like, it was basically non-existent. I pretty much, you know, when they would try to talk to me about, I mean, like, honestly, like, I just, like, they like, would say things to me, like, you know, one of my family friends, who I knew for a long time, took a bunch of drugs and actually became a vegetable, like, basically, like, non-responsive. And my parents were like, this is, like, what you're doing, and, like, this is what's going to happen to you. And I specifically remember saying the words, I don't see how that affects me at all. You know, like, I had absolutely no care for other people, you know, unless I got caught for something or unless I got in trouble for something. And then I was like, I'm sorry. And, you know, and that's just the way that I, like, operated in my relationships. And I absolutely, like, manipulated people. And, you know, I was very nice to your face to get you to do what I wanted you to do, you know, to give me the things that I needed to get. You know, and I, and so people were leaving for college, and I was not interested in college whatsoever. I just was like, and granted, I didn't even see my life past 18 years old. Like, I just couldn't, there was no, like, oh, like, there's a future beyond this. It's just, like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And, like, at that point, it got to the point where it was just, like, hopefully I'll die before then, you know? But alcohol was still fun, and it was just, like, it was those times in between that were absolutely unbearable. And, you know, everyone went off to college, and me and a couple of my friends stayed in Maryland, and I proceeded to just continue to get trashed. And then, you know, my parents were like, you need to get a job. And I was like, that's extreme, but okay. And so I got a... I started working in a restaurant, which was absolutely great for a budding alcoholic. And basically what that gave me was, in the beginning at least, everyone was drinking on the job. Everyone was doing drugs on the job. You know, and to me, it seemed like they were doing worse off than I was, you know, and I was like, oh, like, and the thing was too, is I like, one thing that I did pride myself on was at work, I would work as hard as I possibly could and put everything into that. And if I keep this job and I'm doing okay and you say that I'm, like, okay, then I'm fine. You know, you can't say anything about my drinking if I'm the best employee in the joint, you know. And that was the case until I can't maintain that stuff, though, you know, because alcohol always comes first. And what started happening was I would get drunk on the job and, you know, they would catch me stealing alcohol. I would, like, spill my, like, water, which was really vodka, like, on all the menus, and then all the menus would smell like vodka, like, just, like, those kind of instances. And, you know, and my friends that was working there, you know, very soon it was, like, they had to carry me back into my house kind of thing, you know. Like, they had to, like, pile me into their car because I was absolutely trashed and passed out, and, you know, they didn't really want to hang out with me anymore. And my attitude towards that was like, okay, like, that's your loss anyways, you know? And, you know, but they didn't fire me for some reason. And, you know, during that period of time, because before I didn't really have a lot of access to alcohol, I did the best I could to get it wherever I could, you know, but there I could steal from them. And what started happening is I would get off of work and, continue drinking because I've been drinking my whole shift, and would somehow make it home. And then I was still living at home, and my parents, and this was like on a daily basis for a very long time. You know, my parents would get home and they could tell I was breathing, but they could not wake me up. So they would sit by my side and check my pulse and make sure that I was breathing, you know, day after day after day. And I like didn't even, like, process at all. Like, I would just get up and be like, okay, like, next day of work, you know, and, like, had zero self-awareness about my drinking, and, like, and I couldn't really, because if I looked at my drinking, then that, you know, I would have to do something about it, which I was not willing to do. And so, you know, I, like, continued, and, like, things progressively got worse and worse, you know, but again, I had the attitude of, like, okay, that sucked, but, like, this is just how my life is, you know, and, like, I didn't see a purpose for living other than drinking, like, absolutely, like, that was the thing that got me through the day. That was the thing that, you know, no matter how bad my life got, it made me feel like there was hope still. And, you know, I continued to go down that road, and, like, things started happening. And, like, I think one specific story is, like, and this was not even, like, towards the end of my drinking, but, like, it just kind of encapsulates how I was when I was with drinking. I had a friend who was having a birthday party who I had lost touch with, and this was, like, one of my, like, early childhood friends, like, great person, like, you know, was off at school doing great things, and, you know, in high school wasn't a drinker or anything like that, and that was the reason that we stopped hanging out. And, you know, this person invited me to their birthday party, so I was like, of course I'm going to come. And, you know, and that night, like, and during my drinking, like, there were nights where, like, you know, I would absolutely get trashed, but, like, nothing bad happened. You know, I was, like, really happy, like, you know, there was no, like, the next day there weren't people, like, do you know what you did? It was just, like, oh, like, I was fun that night. But the thing was, is, like, it was, like, a 50-50 shot of, like, whether that was going to be me that night or whether you were going to get the absolutely psychotic, belligerent, angry, you know, person that would just like, not, I would not take anyone's, like, I just didn't see people as people then. They were just obstacles in my way. And so what happened that night, that was, like, the fun Brendan, you know, it was, like, a good time. I, like, saw a bunch of people that I had grown up with, you know, and I used some other stuff to make sure that I didn't black out right away. You know, it was a fun night and it was great, you know, and I stayed over there and I woke up the next morning and I was like, I'm going to help clean up. And by clean up, that was drink everything that was left over from the night before. You know, it's like, and I don't remember a whole lot after that. What I do remember is, coming out of a blackout, screaming at this person, at this friend, and I, like, stopped, and that was terrifying because I had no idea, A, what I was saying, and B, how I'd, like, I didn't know the time span of that, of what had happened in that period of time, but what had happened is I had gotten, completely trashed, slept with someone in her brother's room, and while her parents were home, screamed at her parents, and then had her and her friend drive my car back because I was absolutely trashed. And I guess in a blackout, I had driven back to her house, crashed my car in front of her house, you know, and was there and was screaming at her because she was trying to help me. And she was like, what's wrong? I don't know what's going on with you. And I, you know, and what I did is I proceeded to yell at her. I proceeded to yell at her whole family. I stayed in their house for 24 hours and, like, just absolutely terrorized these people, you know, just, like, taking their alcohol in front of them, chugging it, like, absolute insanity, you know. And I remember waking up the next day, and my parents were like, again, do you know what you did last night? And by that time, I didn't want to hear, like, by at that point, like, when people would say that, like, I just don't want to know. Like, I don't remember. As far as I'm concerned, it's none of my business. Please just leave me alone. You know, and it didn't faze me. And I, like, I was scared, though, a little bit, however, because I had never, I mean, I drank and drove all the time, which I'm not proud of, but, and it had never crossed my mind. But for some, I don't remember ever blacking out and drinking and driving, and that scared me a little bit, you know, because I didn't care if you thought I was unpredictable, but most of the time, like, I was, I mean, it wasn't even that I knew what I was going to do, but I was just okay with it, and that for some reason scared me and kind of got through to me for about a day, and then, you know, I went back to work and I started drinking again, and I continued to do that for a couple months, and, you know, not a whole lot changed, and by this time I was probably, I think I was 18 at that time, and so I continued, like, fast forward a little bit, I continued drinking, it's like all that same stuff, you know, which just, like, kept, like, destroying my family, destroying my relationships with other people, and, you know, and just not caring, because I was, like, I can always find new friends, you know, and my parents have to love me anyways, regardless, you know, and, like, and just having no idea of the damage I was doing, like just being so consumed with self, like everything was just about me and getting that next drink and doing whatever I had to do. You know, let me just check the time. Okay. And I guess like what kind of led me to what happened was I, you know, got off of work, got picked up by a friend, went back to my friend's house, specifically to steal other substances from them so that I can so that I could trade them for alcohol with this other person. And this person picked me up and bought me two huge bottles of Mad Dogs, which I absolutely loved. I think it gets a bad rep in AA sometimes, but I don't know. I loved it. And, you know, I downed both of those bottles as soon as possible, walked into my house. And then, you know, again, no matter how much I drink, like, the phenomenon of craving kicks in, and I need more. At that point, it wasn't like, I want more, like, oh, that would be nice if I could have some. It's like, I need it. So what I did is, and again, I don't know why, but I was in, like, a bathrobe, and I started breaking into people's houses and stole a bunch of alcohol and didn't get caught or anything like that, you know, but, like, walked, I remember walking down in this bathrobe and with, like, a woven basket with a bunch of Bud Light in it, like, about 20, and, you know, just walking back to my house, like, it was no big deal. And, like, I didn't, and the thing is, too, like, again, like, that stuff wasn't happening in the beginning of my drinking. I did a lot to make sure that, you know, I could try to keep hidden what I was doing. And, like, you know, I would obviously do things that weren't okay, but I would try to be smart enough so that people would not notice my drinking. Or at least, like, I would get in trouble because of my drinking to protect it. And at this point, I just, like, did not care anymore. And I woke up the next day, and I forget. I was supposed to, like, go volunteer somewhere, and I don't know why. I think that was, like, kind of like, oh, maybe if I volunteer, like, I'll feel okay somewhere. And I remember, but I was like, I gotta drink some beer before. So at, like, 8 in the morning, I drank about, like, I think I drank like about like 10 or so. And also too, by that time, it was very weird. I, you know, some nights I would, you know, drink like maybe like 12 beers and I like physically wouldn't feel drunk. And then sometimes I would take 2 shots and I would feel absolutely trashed. And that like didn't make any sense to me. It would make me angry, but this time I did get trashed. And, you know, my mom knocked on my door and she knew I was drinking because that's pretty much all I would ever do. And, you know, she knocked on my door and I opened up and I, you know, I told her to leave me alone and cursed at her, and then shoved her, slammed my door. I had a back, like a go bag, and I grabbed that and, climbed out of my window and slid down the roof of the house and just like made a run for it, and continued drinking. And what happened was, I was walking down, 7 Locks Road in Rockville and, I was drinking, and then I just remember being just so angry and frustrated with, I don't know why my life is like this, and I don't, you know, I, like, couldn't imagine continuing going on, you know, the way that I was going, but, like, I sure as hell was not going to stop drinking, and what I remember is I woke up to 2 police officers over me on the side of the road, and asking me how I was doing, and I said I was good, and offered one of the cops a beer, thinking that it would be like, haha, like, get me out of trouble. He didn't think that was funny, and he handcuffed me and threw me in the back of his car. And what I was told was that several people had called him, or called the station, saying that there was someone who was attempting to run into the road, but was too drunk to do it. So I was, like, going back and forth, and... And, you know, I actually am very grateful for those 2 police officers, because what happened is they took me to the drunk tank, you know, where I had been before, knew the drill. But, again, I was having a great time. I was, like, trying to talk to the people that were in there. I actually helped someone get out of there. It was weird. I just was like, they can't keep you here, all this stuff. I was not in that same situation. And, you know, but, again, I was having a good time. And then... you know, but what I do remember, and this is kind of just speaks to like my relationship with other people, is that I got very angry at one point and asked them if I could call one of my parents. And I specifically called my mom. She picked up the phone and I told her, I told her to go to hell basically, and was more explicit than that. But I called her specifically to tell her that. Like, there was no, like, get me out. I was just, like, an angry, angry little drunk that was, like, hated everything about my life but had no idea what to do about it other than just, like, lash out at people around me. And so, you know, then I, like, sobered up and I was presented again with a psychiatric evaluation. And I, again, like, it's so funny how, like, I can feel so low and so desperate. And then literally give me enough time to sober up, and then I'm fine, I'm good. You know, and I thought I aced their test. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to get out for sure. And they were like, yeah, we're keeping you here for a week. And I was very upset at that and responded in the way that I shouldn't have to the doctor. And, you know, they took me up to the psych ward. And what I'm grateful for that is, you know, they brought a meeting of, they had an H&I commitment that came in there to bring in a meeting. And I said I would go, but then push came to shove, I didn't want to go. And they said, one of the nurses who was smart was like, you know, if you go to the AA meeting, you get out of here faster. And I was like, I'm with you. And then, you know, went into the meeting, and I don't remember a whole lot. I actually remember the woman's face. I don't remember a whole lot of what she said, other than I remember she was, you know, describing like the mental obsession. You know, she would get off work and every day she would say, you know, she was in Virginia, and she would pass the 7-Eleven, and every time she was like, I'm not going to turn around. And every time she turned around and she got a drink, and then she would go back home and then go back and forth. And I related to that. But I didn't know what that meant. I had like no clue what an alcoholic was. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but I related to her, and, you know, I got put into an outpatient program, through Suburban, and, you know, and I say that, like, I never really tried to control my drinking. However, luckily working through a sponsor through the steps, I was able to go back through my story and kind of uncover some things. You know, I agreed that I was not going to drink or use while I was at that program, and I lasted maybe like 3 weeks, you know, and then I was off to the races. And like I continued, I was actually that outpatient, I was supposed to be there for like 3 or 4 months. I was there for like a year and a half. But, you know, but they brought AA meetings in every Friday from members of my home group. You know, and I really hated them. I hated them so much. I would sit there and, you know, they would share their stories and, you know, a whole range of people, young people. But, you know, it was kind of like, that's great for you that you're sober now and, like, good for you. Like, I'm happy for you, but, like, that's not possible for me, because if you knew how I felt, if you knew what drinking did for me, like, you would not be sober. You know, and then that's what I would say, and then other times I would just sit there in silence and stare at them. You know, and I continued drinking and continued to, and the thing about that too was I was so delusional about my drinking. You know, I remember when we would get drug tested and I would, you know, I drank and I just stopped caring. And you know, they would be like, Brendan, like your drug test showed that like you had alcohol in your system. And I was so delusional of like, I like tried to come up with a story of what someone normal, who doesn't have a problem would say. And my story was that I was walking my dog in the woods, and there was a bottle of wine on the ground. And my exact words were, why not? You know? And I literally thought that was something like that someone without a problem would say. And I actually, now that I think about it, I'm very impressed that the woman did not laugh in my face. You know, and that was just how I was, like, so delusional, and I was not willing to give up drinking. And, you know, while I was there, you know, there weren't a whole lot of consequences at all, like no psych wards, no car accidents, nothing. You know, but what started to happen is I started to listen in those AA meetings, and I felt like it ruined my drinking. And, you know, I had one friend that I would go to her apartment, and I would get trashed at, you know, day and night. And one night I went over and had two bottles of Jack and polished off one and then blacked out. And then I woke up the next morning and there was no alcohol left. There were no drugs left. You know, and I was just left with myself. And I remember, you know, going into the bathroom and like looking in the mirror, and I had like a moment of clarity of just like, this is not going to get better, you know? And I wasn't even like, oh, you're an alcoholic. I was just like, there was something seriously wrong. You know, and I just like felt so horrible, you know, and I totally relate to when people would talk about like alcohol being my solution, not my problem. And that my problem was staying sober because it was just so unbearable without a spiritual solution. And so what happened is I started to think a little, I went home, and for some reason did not continue to look for stuff to get messed up. And, I was sitting in my room and I was kind of thinking to myself, you know, well, what if like those AA people are right, you know, and like, what if you are an alcoholic? And it took me about like 2 hours to be like, I think you're an alcoholic kind of thing. Like, would it be so bad, all this stuff? Cause I knew that those people were happy and they had something going on with them. I had no idea. You know, and I kind of just admitted, I had no idea what an alcoholic was. Really, I just thought I had a problem with drinking and that's what an alcoholic was. You know, but I knew that I hadn't uttered a truthful thing in like years, absolutely years. And I knew that I was not going to walk into my drug counselor and tell them the truth about like that I think I'm an alcoholic. So I had to write it down. I had to write down that I was an alcoholic and like bring it with me so that they would see that I had something written down and they would be like, what's that? Because I knew, you know, I knew myself and I knew that I wouldn't tell the truth otherwise. And, you know, and I started unloading on this person and just being like, this is how I'm actually drinking. You know, I feel horrible. I want to kill myself. I just don't know how to keep going on, but I just don't know how to stop. You know, and that person, there was actually someone that worked at that outpatient that was a member of my home group. And they offered to take me to a meeting, which was a Monday night meeting, called Promises. And, I was absolutely terrified because I had actually been to, I think, one other meeting before that because my, outpatient required it. And it was, like, I think the youngest person in the meeting was probably, like, 40, which I actually, like, loved. I, like, was, like, this is cool, like, and I was, like, you have great stories and all that stuff. I was, like, I don't know how this pertains to me, but, like, great stories. And you know, but then I got thrown into this group of young people, and I was absolutely terrified because I didn't know how to have an actual interaction with someone. You know, and they kind of, like, ambushed me, and, you know, came around me and were like, what's your number? What are you doing? All this stuff. And my friend would try to like introduce me to people. And then I would like run away, like on the other side of the church. You know, and like I fell into a very active, you know, a very active area and a very active home group, you know, which I'm very grateful for. And like, cause I'm someone, my grand sponsor also says this, I'm someone that, you know, absolutely feeds off the people that I'm around. You know, I'm someone that, you know, without drinking, I care so much about what people think. My ego is ginormous and I have a lot of pride. And I just want people to like me. And I was very beaten down and desperate, you know, because I didn't come to AA because, you know, someone told me I had to. I came to AA because I felt like I had no other options and I just didn't know what to do. And the reality is I know that, you know, that feeling only lasts so long unless I take actions and unless I get involved in the steps, you know, because I know for me, like, I will always have another drink in me unless I'm taking the actions in Alcoholics Anonymous, and engaging in a relationship with a higher power that I found here. You know, but I came into AA and I had no idea what was going on. Like, none, not a clue, not a, like, I didn't know what the steps were. I, like, said I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know what that meant. You know, but I was very desperate, and I knew that, you know, you guys seemed happier than I was. And I believe, and one thing that was very important for me was I believed what you guys were saying. And, you know, I believed that you drank the way that I drank, and somehow, some way, that you guys were doing okay, and that you didn't feel miserable, and that you didn't feel like the way I felt anymore. But you knew that what that felt like. And that was super important to me, because I spent all my life people telling me what to do. You know, you need to do this because, and you guys just shared your experience with me. You know, you guys gave me suggestions, and they were, and, you know, people were like, you know, if you want what we have, just do what we do. And I was like, what do you do? And, like, you'll see. And, like, didn't get a whole lot of specifics on that, and just kind of got pulled along for the ride. You know, but I got a sponsor very quickly. I got very involved in service early on, because people were just, like, telling me what to do. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. Like, I just don't want to feel this way anymore. Not because I'm a good person or that, you know, those things come naturally to me. It's quite the opposite. You know, and I got involved in the steps as soon as possible. You know, and I'm very grateful for that, because I know I would not be sober today without going through the steps with a sponsor. You know, and I was the kind of, I kind of had the attitude of, like, I'm going to give this my all, and then if it doesn't work, I can always go back to the things I was doing before. And that was absolutely so helpful for me, because once I had given Alcoholics Anonymous a real shot and was actually willing and stopped, you know, and, like, shut my mouth and kept my opinions to myself and just was like, you know, these people are trying to help me, maybe I should try what they have to offer before I dismiss it. You know, and I started going through the steps, and like I said, I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but luckily I related to the literature, like, to the T. The first time I read it, it was like a page-turner, and I was like, how do people not know about this? And people were like, no, we know about it. Like, it's you. And I'm just like, okay. But I absolutely found myself, you know, in the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. You know, and started to see where I was powerless over alcohol, you know. And I kind of was I easily admitted that my life was unmanageable, mainly because I, like, wanted nothing to do with life. And I just was like, I didn't get it. I don't get the point. I don't know what to do other than drink and, you know, and continued on to my fourth and fifth step, which, again, I mean, like, I was like, I just want to, like, I want to get, I know a lot of people that have struggled, you know, and have sat on their fourth step, but I was like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to do these steps. I'm going to, like, I need to feel better. And it wasn't necessarily, that was kind of my motive. I was like, I just don't want to feel this way anymore. And I believe you people when you say that there's a solution, you know. And I went through a fourth and fifth step, you know, and started to actually, like, get a new perspective on how I acted in relationships and with other people. That I was completely self-serving, and I thought I was a nice person, and I was absolutely not, you know. Putting a smile on and, you know, being nice to someone's face so that, you know, you get what you need is not a friendship, you know. And I started looking at the damage to my family, you know. And one thing that I did really struggle with was this idea of God. I had always believed in God, but the God of my understanding at that point, our relationship was pretty messed up, you know. I grew up where thinking that, you know, that, I mean, people had told me all my life, like, you are going to hell, and I kind of resigned myself to that fact, and I thought a relationship with God was that if I hurt myself enough and repent, like, it'll be fine. And I didn't know that the God that you were talking about was the God of your own understanding. I really struggled with it, and I refused to pray. That was the one thing I was not willing to do, which is kind of like the whole thing here. It's like, that's what the whole point of the book is, to get a higher power and a relationship. And I'm so grateful for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that were just kind of like, stop overthinking it, toss those things out the window, and just, like, and keep taking the actions. You know, my sponsor had me read A Spiritual Experience, where it talks about, you know, honesty, willingness, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, you know, and that no one should have trouble with the spirituality of the program. You know, but I still had my way with it, and I still had trouble letting go of that old idea. I had a lot of people help me with that, you know, but I kept taking the actions anyways. And, you know, through the fourth and the fifth step and through sticking around Alcoholics Anonymous and being of service wherever I could, you know, it was a lot of, like, picking up four or five people. Most of the time it was newcomers, and we were all kind of crazy, but we were all going to the meeting and all doing service and setting the meetings up. You know, those moments and starting to actually build relationships with people, and starting to watch what, like, the people with, I'm so grateful for the old-timers, because I would just watch what they did. Like, literally, I would stare at them, like, during the meetings, and, like they didn't have their phone out, they didn't, like, they weren't talking to other people, and, like, moved on from there, like, their actions. And, you know, and then them and my sponsor just giving me, you know, love and tolerance. And, you know, I started making amends, which, you know, and by that point, when I got to six, backtrack a little bit, when I got to six and seven, I had hit that point of, like, I couldn't hold my breath any longer, with, you know, just, like, denying the relationship with my higher power. It was starting to get more uncomfortable and more uncomfortable. And, yeah, I just felt like I was, like, holding my breath underwater, and that it was just getting more and more painful. And so I was able to surrender, you know, and just start doing it. And it, like, absolutely changed a whole, like, everything, you know. And it, when I let go of that, like willfulness of just, like, this is what I, like, absolutely just, like, belligerence and being, like, this is what I used to believe in, this is the only thing, and this is what you're telling me to believe in, and everyone, and it's the funny thing, is, like, I would hear things in meetings, and, like, that's not what actually was said, you know. And I started to actually listen specifically to what people were saying in their experience, and, like, I'm just, and was absolutely floored, you know, continuing to go through the steps with a higher power to build that relationship, which my sponsor always steered me toward, always, and still does today. You know, usually when I call my sponsor and I have whatever's going on, usually real or imagined, my sponsor's response is, like, you need to pray. You need to pray about it, and then you need to help someone. You know, and I, you know, and showing up for my family, and being different in relationships and going through that amends process, where I did make amends to that, my friend who had the birthday party, you know, and going and facing, like, who and what I was and taking ownership of my actions and being in a place where I wasn't taking those actions. My sponsor made that very clear of, like, you don't go to these people and just say you're sorry. You go to these people and say, I don't do that anymore, and I'm sorry for what I did to you, and, like, what can I make right? What can I do to make this right? And, you know, and experiencing that was absolutely, again, life-changing, like, everything in this program. And, you know, I started to actually understand what you guys were talking about in meetings. You know, I would hear people, you know, talk about the promises and how their life had changed. And I was like, and I believed that they had that, but I didn't know if it was possible for me. You know, and I'm so grateful, you know, for my sponsor and, you know, being, like, my home group and pushing me to do service and pushing me to be inconvenienced, you know, and to reach my hand out to that next alcoholic that comes in the room. And that has probably been absolutely the highlight of my life, in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to see people come in and see them how, like, broken and sad and miserable they are, and actually watch, like, that transformation happen. It's absolutely incredible. And, and, you know, and getting to have those relationships with, you know, the people in my life that I had harmed, and then also, like, these new relationships. And, you know, the most important one is the one with my higher power, you know, which I never thought I would ever say. But I'm so eternally grateful for it, and I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and for groups like these, like Pockets of Enthusiasm, as I've heard people talk about it. You know, like, Alcoholics Anonymous has absolutely been the most amazing thing that has happened in my life. And, I mean, really just gave me a life. I don't really consider what I was doing before Alcoholics Anonymous living, really. But, yeah, I'm very grateful to be here. And thank you so much, Sam, for asking me to speak. And I think that's all I got. Thanks.